Are you all ready to proceed?
Ready to proceed, Your Honor.
Ready, Your Honor.
All right. I'll have the clerk call our second case.
The court will now call Strategic Partners at the Division Corporation versus Strategic Partners Corporation and Ballard. And may I please support Mr. Andrew Keith to argue for a combined total of 15 minutes for the appellant and appellee Ballard. And Mr. Jesse Contreras to argue for a combined total of 15 minutes for the appellant and appellee Strategic Partners.
Support.
Yes, sir.
It's good to see you this morning, Your Honors. Good to see you, Justice Birdwell, at your new bench. And Your Honors, if I may just Ballup's president, Bob Keach, is here to observe arguments. In the interest of time, I will not repeat all the details which underlie this personal jurisdiction dispute. I know that you're familiar with them from the briefing. And I was not here for everything that was said in the prior case, but it seems like we have some similarities between them.
Yes, it's special appearance day.
Now, there are two black letter starting points, however, which should guide this argument. Number one, minimum contacts analysis centers on whether the exercise of jurisdiction comports with traditional notions of fair play and substantial justice. This will be an important touchstone in this matter. Number two, the plaintiff's pleadings must be taken as true unless the defendants presented unrebutted evidence effectively disproving the allegations. So let us begin our discussion today on something that must be taken as true. Mr. Singer and his companies slowed and then stopped the design, manufacture, and shipment of Ballup apparel and footwear to Texas, and stopped distribution and sales of that apparel and footwear in Texas in order to pressure concessions in relation to personal investments of Mr. Singer in a Texas company. So let me say that again. Mr. Singer and his companies slowed and then stopped the design, manufacture, and shipment of Ballup apparel and footwear to Texas, and the distribution and sales of that apparel and footwear in Texas in order to pressure concessions in relation to personal investments of Mr. Singer in a Texas company.
Where did those personal, what is the state in which those personal investments originated and where the pressure was applied?
All right. The personal investments were with a Texas company, and the documents set forth that they were Texas investments governed by Texas law, and any disputes related to those investments would be subject to jurisdiction in Texas courts, and that Mr. Singer agreed to Texas jurisdiction and waived any objections to Texas jurisdiction. So those investments were centered in a Texas company with Texas law and Texas venue.
Thank you.
Ballup alleges in its pleadings that this work in Texas was stopped, first slowed and then stopped. Mr. Singer has offered no evidence as to why he stopped the project. He has offered no evidence as to why designs were not released to manufacturers for pricing, no evidence as to why his companies ignored standard requests from Texas buyers who would have signed a purchase
Counsel,
order.
Doesn't that go to the merits of the case?
Well, Your Honor, It does go to the merits of the case, but it also goes to jurisdiction, in that these things would have occurred here in the state of Texas, but for this tortious behavior. Now, what Mr. Singer does not say ever is, "Well, we didn't ship that stuff to Texas for this other reason. When this store in Texas with the Texas shop said, we really want to buy your shoes, but we want a shirt to go with it, standard type of thing, and request is sent in to them, and they say, no, we're not going to do it. He doesn't say, well, we didn't make the T-shirt for some other reason. What is it therefore admitted by Mr. Singer is that the reason that he stopped and first slowed and then stopped all of this activity is because he was using it to try to pressure concessions on his taxes.
It's an admission by omission? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's correct, because the allegations of the pleadings have to be taken as true unless evidence is offered to factually disprove those. And he offered no evidence on those points. So, and also, he offered no evidence to contradict the fact that, and the evidence and the allegations before the court are this, that he told Ballup that his companies would not move forward on the project unless his personal investment issues were resolved. He specifically tied his investments to the progress of the Ballup project in Texas, and he's offered no evidence to contradict that. Accordingly, the court must assume as true those facts, that his company slowed and stopped the design, manufacture, and shipment of Ballup apparel and footwear to Texas, distribution and sales of that apparel and footwear in Texas, in order to pressure concessions in relation to his Texas investments. That's the starting point. In this case, but for the acts of Mr. Singer and his companies, apparel and footwear would have been manufactured and shipped to Texas to the strategic partner's warehouse. There they would have been packaged, taken to the docks, trucked across the state of Texas, put into shops and sold, and the profits would have been distributed to Ballup in Texas. And Mr. Singer admitted all those things in his deposition. Now, he argues that Ballup is alleging it is the victim of a tort which Singer should have known would be felt in Texas, the sort of direct a tort theory. But that is not what this case is. Ballup is alleging that Singer and his companies, their conduct in, connected them to Texas in a meaningful way, which is a standard approved in TV Azteca versus Ruiz, which is one of the cases cited and relied upon by Mr. Singer. Now, an analogy, Your Honors, may be this. Like, so, for example, an oil and gas dispute where a refining company has constructed a refinery in Texas in reliance on the promise from a crude provider to transmit oil to that refinery. If the crude provider wrongly withheld the oil from arriving at the Texas refinery, that would itself be the harm in Texas. And that's essentially what we have here. Mr. Singer and his companies wrongly prevented the Ballup goods and apparel from being shipped to Texas, distributed from Dallas-Fort Worth, and sold across Texas. And all of that was admittedly the plan of the entire project. Now, let's talk about the investment. This is an investment agreement which Justice Meyer, as I mentioned before, has all these Texas requirements in it. It's unsigned. We have 3 points of black letter law in Texas related to that come together in this one document. Number one, that jurisdictional clauses are enforceable. There's no dispute about that. Number two, that the allegations in the petition must be taken as true unless effectively disproved. No dispute about that. And number three, there is no need for a signature on a document in order for that agreement to be in place. Now, the strategic partners side have cited a case called Lujan, which argues for the proposition that if the document itself required execution in order for it to be valid, then the lack of a signature would be dispositive. We didn't have that in this case. There is no such requirement in any of the documents that they be executed before they're valid. There was a rep and warranty in one of the documents that it had been executed, but there was no requirement that it must be executed. So, Singer agreed, and I won't go through every bit of that evidence, but we've laid it out bit by bit by bit of all the actions that he took. He knew that this had a Texas jurisdiction provision. He conceded to it. He only sent the money into Texas after he knew and was aware of that. Now, that agreement said that the dispute, anything directly or indirectly related to his investment, comes to Texas. Now, Ballup has pled a case that is based directly or at the very least indirectly on Mr. Singer's investment. And he acknowledged this link when he sued Ballup in California under the same investment. Now, he later dropped Ballup from his California case when he realized that it would have an impact on his standing here and his jurisdictional fight. So, does the exercise of jurisdiction in this case comport with standards of fair play and substantial justice? Mr. Singer entered into valid investments with a Texas company and agreed to have those disputes, any disputes related to those investments, heard in Texas. He also directed his companies to do business in Texas with a second Texas company, Ballup. Then, when he decided it was in his interest, he used his companies to evade the requirements of the investment agreement, and he choked off the shipment and sale of goods to Texas. It was a carrot and a stick. The stick was, I'm withholding all these things that you've been building your company for 5 years. And the carrot was, you give me some relief over here on my personal business, and I'll start that up again. When all the time he knew he wasn't going to start it up again. And by doing so, Mr. Singer destroyed 5 years of hard work and millions of dollars of capital, which Ballup had spent to reach that very point, to put its branded products to market.
Was it Mr. Singer's position that these advancements of money would not be culminated with a final payment until the agreements were signed?
That is the position that he has taken now. Throughout the course of the month, week after week and month after month. In fact, there's an important email that you would want to refer to, Justice Meyer. It's in the brief, quoted verbatim, where he said before he sent in his last payment, I want to make sure that all the agreements are final before I send in the last wire to Texas.
Wouldn't that make the signing of the agreement mandatory?
Your Honor, not under Texas law. What he said was, I want to make sure we have all the agreements final in order before I send in the wire. There was last-minute discussion and amongst the lawyers, and then he was comfortable and he sent in the last wire. And as he admitted in his deposition, what you were saying was, before you sent in that money, you wanted the agreement to be final. That's right. And then he sent in the money. And at his deposition, he was asked, at any time, did you ever say, in all these weeks, in all these months, did you ever say, hey, we don't have a deal? Hey, don't spend the $3.1 million I've sent to you. Hey, until we can finalize this thing, we have to resolve some final differences. And specifically, he never ever said, by the way, I won't agree to a Texas venue and jurisdiction clause. By his behavior and sending the money and the other items we've laid out in the evidence and in the brief, he agreed to those documents by his behavior, and that is laid out by the evidence, which was not disproved. The allegations say that those are taken as true unless they are disproved. They were not disproved. Now, the impact of this was really could hardly have been more devastating on Ballup. Now, Mr. Singer now argues to this court that it would satisfy fair play and substantial justice for him to evade his investment agreement, and that the Texas court system has no interest to call him to account for the allegations against him for the harm done to Ballup. This argument should fail. Now, there are other factors to consider. There are numerous direct connections in the state of Texas on the project itself. Mr. Singer arranged for a Texas Distribution Center visit for a Ballup investor and a board member. The Texas Distribution Center's manager took Ballup president, Mr. Keach, on a tour of the Texas facility. Mr. Singer also arranged for Ballup to meet his partners for a project meeting at the Texas Distribution Center. The strategic partners' documents, internal documents, noted that Ballup was very impressed with their Texas operational capabilities, and also indicated that the items would be shipped to the Texas Distribution Center and sent out from there. That was always the plan. Now, one of the arguments is, well, we know it was just this company over here that was doing all this stuff. It wasn't all of our other companies that were involved. But at deposition, the allegations were it was all these companies and that they were acting as one entity. At deposition of Mr. Singer and Mr. Pierpoint, who was the corporate representative, they could not specify which company was doing what. There was a board of directors making the decisions. However, the company that has accepted jurisdiction and acknowledged jurisdiction, Strategic Distribution, has no board of directors. The board of directors was for one of these other companies that has been sued, or perhaps for all of them. They could not say who was doing what. And because they could not say who was doing what, they cannot disprove that those companies were involved in this Texas project. Now, finally, well, it looks like I'm out of time, so I'll have to save the rest for my rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Yep.
May it please the court. When specific jurisdiction is asserted, the minimum contacts analysis focuses on the relationship between the non-resident defendant, the forum state, and the litigation. There must be a substantial connection between the defendant's contacts and the operative facts of the litigation. And the contacts must allow a defendant to reasonably anticipate being hailed into a Texas court. Here, Ballup failed to plead tortious conduct occurred in Texas. The tortious conduct alleged here was misrepresentation and concealment. The misrepresentation was, allegedly, Mr. Singer said, if you make me happy on my separate investments, Strategic will continue to participate in the Ballup joint venture. And the act of concealment is the failure to disclose that Strategic had slowed or stopped work on the Ballup project. Ballup had to plead that the misrepresentation was made in Texas, and or that the concealed acts took place in Texas, and it did neither. Nor did Ballup submit evidence supporting such a claim. While Ballup submitted an affidavit from its president claiming Mr. Singer told Ballup his companies would not move forward on the project until his concerns about the personal investments in One Holdings and Midland Entertainment had been resolved, a statement Ballup claims was false. Ballup submitted no evidence establishing the alleged misrepresentation was made in Texas. The affidavit doesn't identify where the statement was made, when it was made, or who it was made to, and you can't find that in the pleading either. Ballup's president's affidavit also claims he observed that once Mr. Singer demanded the return of his investments, it appeared to Ballup that Singer's and his company's efforts on the Ballup project began to slow. Critically, the affidavit does not state the slowdown of activity occurred in Texas. Indeed, the affidavit doesn't attempt to identify where those efforts were conducted at all. Instead, the only evidence before the trial court was that any alleged misrepresentation or slowdown did not occur in Texas. With respect to Mr. Singer was never a party to the proposed joint venture. As CEO of Strategic Distribution, that's a generally appearing defendant who's not party to any of these appeals, all of Singer's work on the project took place in California. As CEO of Strategic Distribution, all of the supervision Singer provided for project-related work was over California employees doing work in California. All of Singer's face-to-face meetings with Ballup related to the project took place in California, with the exception of one meeting that took place in Oregon. All of Singer's interactions with Ballup took place through Ballup's corporate office in Valley Village, California. And the same story is true with respect to the entities. None of the entities, none of the specially appearing defendants, were parties to the proposed joint venture. They incurred no expenses related to the proposed joint venture. And because none of them had employees, they're just holding companies, they played no role in the proposed joint venture, and they engaged in no actions in furtherance of the proposed joint venture. As non-operational holding companies, they had no dealings of any kind with Ballup or the possible joint venture. And this is critical. Mr. Keech states the pleading alleges that there were, in fact, orders placed in Texas. It doesn't say that. Nor do the supporting affidavits say that. What they say was that there was interest in products by a retailer who also owns stores in Texas. But that interest was not orders. Nobody ever alleged that any orders were placed. And in fact, Mr. Singer submitted an affidavit that made clear that the Texas-based distribution center owned by Strategic Distributions, the generally appearing defendant who is not a party to these appeals, played no role in the possible joint venture because the project never reached the manufacture and distribution stage. So by the pleadings and by the evidence before the trial court, nothing happened in Texas. In fact, there was disputed evidence as to whether Ball Up had any significant presence in Texas at all. While Ball Up claimed it had an office and employees in Texas, former Ball Up employees claimed they were not aware of any legitimate Texas office. Ball Up's CEO could not identify the address of the Texas location and could not specifically identify any employees other than its president, Mr. Keach, who resides in Texas, and his assistant. Thus, there's no evidence in the record to support a claim that tortious conduct was committed in Texas. In the absence of such allegations or evidence, a specially appearing defendant satisfies his or its burden simply by establishing they are not residents of Texas. That's the Kelly v. General Interior Construction case, a decision of the Supreme Court of Texas, which is controlling. Kelly arose out of the renovation of a Houston-based hotel. The owner sued the general contractor and subcontractors for work done on the project. The Texas-based subcontractor filed a cross-claim against an Arizona-based general contractor and its Arizona-based officers who were sued as third parties. The claim against the officers was that they fraudulently represented that the Texas subcontractor would be fully paid for its work. But the Texas subcontractor failed to plead that any of the misrepresentations occurred in Texas. In support of their special appearance, the officers submitted evidence establishing they were residents of Arizona, not Texas. The trial court denied the special appearance, and the Court of Appeal affirmed. The Supreme Court reversed and entered judgment in favor for the officers dismissing the claims. The Supreme Court held, quote, if the plaintiff fails to plead facts bringing the defendant within reach of the long-arm statute, in other words, for a tort claim that the defendant committed tortious acts in Texas, the defendant need only prove that it does not live in Texas to negate jurisdiction. That's 310 Southwest 3rd, 653 at pages 658 and 59. Since the subcontractor's live pleading failed to allege that the officer's wrongdoing occurred in Texas, the officers negated all bases for jurisdiction by establishing that they did not reside in Texas. The Supreme Court held that the Court of Appeal erroneously relied upon conduct directed towards Texas rather than limiting its analysis to the officer's conduct in Texas. Thus, the Supreme Court found the following acts irrelevant for the jurisdictional analysis: that performance under the construction contract was to be performed exclusively in Texas, that officers sent payments to the subcontractors in Texas, that officers made site visits to the Texas work site, and that the officers received invoices from Texas relating to the Texas project. It was not proper to consider the project's relationship with the forum. You can only consider the defendant's relationship with the forum and assess whether the defendant's forum contacts give rise to the claim. Kelly completely addresses Ball Up's claim that you can look at where the Ball Up project was centered to determine if defendants are subject to specific jurisdiction in Texas. That argument is thoroughly rejected by Kelly. For this reason, the special appearances were correctly sustained as to the 197 appellees and erroneously overruled as to the 198 appellants Strategic Partners Acquisition Corp. Because again, the pleading is completely devoid of the necessary Texas connection with the alleged tortious conduct. In the absence of that pleading, you only have to establish that you are not a resident of Texas. Strategic Partners Acquisition Corp. did that. As an alternative basis of jurisdiction with respect to Mr. Singer, Ball Up argues that this unsigned company agreement and subscription agreement can be the basis, serve as a substitute for the jurisdictional analysis. In discussing that issue, they don't discuss the standard of review, and it's important. A trial court's determination as to the validity and enforceability of a forum selection clause is reviewed for an abuse of discretion. This is true even when a forum selection clause is raised in the context of a special appearance. While Bollock disputed that standard, all of the reported decisions make clear that abuse of discretion is the standard. They cite no authority that states otherwise, and they do not meaningfully engage in the cited cases. Bollop had the burden of establishing the validity, enforceability, and applicability of the alleged forum selection agreement. Forum selection clauses are creatures of contract law. A valid forum selection clause dispenses with the minimum contacts analysis entirely. The trial court was well within its discretion in refusing to enforce the forum selection clause. First, Bollop did not establish a right to enforce the agreement. It's black letter law in Texas that a non-signatory to a forum selection agreement has the burden of establishing it was a party to the agreement or had a right to enforce notwithstanding. Bollop made no attempt in the trial court or in this court to establish a basis by which it can enforce the One Holdings Company agreements. Instead of addressing the cited authority, Bollop simply argues without authority that Bollop had no obligation to establish a right to enforce because the language of the agreement is clear on its face that Singer waived a right to object to jurisdiction in this case. But forum selection agreements are no different from any other contracts. They have the same requirements of consideration, mutuality, and privity that apply to all contractual analyses. You have to have a right to enforce an agreement in order to invoke it. No attempt was made here to establish that Bollop had a right to invoke this agreement. And for that reason alone, the trial court correctly disregarded the attempt to invoke the agreement. Second, the trial court did not abuse its discretion by concluding Singer did not assent to the agreement. Bollop admits that whether or not a contract is formed by conduct is a factual issue. Yet Bollop takes the bizarre position that the trial court could not have made any type of factual determination with respect to whether Singer's conduct bound him to the unsigned agreements. Bollop claims that would invade the province of the jury. The problem is this is a preliminary issue. No jury will ever hear in this case whether or not Mr. Singer agreed to an agreement with a non-party relating to shareholder issues that are not dispute in the Bollop tort claim against the other entities. This action has nothing to do with this case. Further, Bollop's position suggests any plaintiff who merely alleges that a non-signatory defendant assented to an unsigned contract by his conduct is allowed to enforce such an agreement. That's not the law. Bollop had the burden of establishing why a non-signatory such as Mr. Singer was bound by the agreement. Here, the trial court heard evidence that Singer and One Holdings were still negotiating the terms of the One Holdings agreement when Singer transmitted his investment funds, and they never concluded those negotiations. That Singer and One Holdings never directly discussed any form selection or choice of law provisions. Singer transmitted initial investment funds before Singer ever received a draft agreement that identified him as a potential investor. That Singer never communicated that he accepted the terms of the One Holdings agreements. That Singer understood he would not be bound by the agreements until he signed them. That the last version of the agreement transmitted to Singer failed to incorporate all of Singer's requested changes. And perhaps most importantly, that One Holdings attorney specifically requested confirmation that Singer had signed the agreement but never received such confirmation. After hearing Singer's evidence and Bollop's evidence, it then fell to the trial court to exercise its discretion as to whether to enforce the unsigned agreements. Under an abuse of discretion standard, the trial court's determination must be sustained if there is any evidence that supports its determination that Singer did not assent to the unsigned company agreements. Here, there was a robust record in front of the trial court upon which it could base the determination that no agreement was assented to. There was an argument in the papers stating that it was a condition precedent. Execution was a condition precedent to the agreements based on the plain language of those agreements. It was argued that no such language can be found in the agreements. That's not true. The reps and warranties section of the One Holdings Company Agreement, section 2.11 sub B, states that member has duly executed and delivered this agreement, and it constitutes the legal, valid, and binding obligation of that member, enforceable against it in accordance with its term. So the rep is, if I sign it, I agree to be bound by it. there's no signature here. This provision is also incorporated by reference into the subscription agreement. That's Section 7 of that agreement. So in both agreements, there was a condition precedent that they be signed in order to be enforceable. And there is no question that...
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but my mind keeps going back to what counsel said to me on presentation of his argument earlier, that Mr. Singer insisted on having documents fully signed and in place before he sent his final investment money. And then he sent the investment money without it all being signed.
Well, I think actually that's an overstatement of what's in the email. Mr. Singer says, it would be my preference to get this all finalized before I send my final payment. But the record before the trial court was clear. Before any agreement was ever transmitted to Mr. Singer with his name on it, he sent $1 million over. The sending of money was never contingent on having finalized agreements. The parties were negotiating, and Mr. Singer elected not to hold up the transmittal of funds based on those negotiations with the understanding that the parties would ultimately reach an agreement. And so the mere fact that he transmitted those funds was not evidence that he consented to a form of the agreement that was transmitted to him. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal.
Let me touch briefly on the standard of review. The standard of review is de novo, as set forth in Ballup's briefing. Strategic Partners parties rely on the Carlisle Bank shares case for the theory that it would be an abuse of discretion standard to review findings related to an unsigned agreement. That misunderstands that case, which came from this court. In the Carlisle Bank Shares case, the plaintiff in that case failed to allege any theories upon which an unsigned agreement would be enforceable. The plaintiff had said direct benefits estoppel, which the court determined was not a valid theory. So that question was never reached. The issue here, which is, you know, was there a meeting of the minds on this investment agreement? That would ultimately be a fact issue to be found by a jury, not by the court. And so it would not be reasonable for this court to assume that Judge Wilkinson found on a fact issue that she would not be authorized to find upon. There are allegations in the pleading that relate to the defendant's actions in the state of Texas. Paragraph 13 of the pleading, which is clerk's record page 138, paragraph 50 of the pleading, clerk's record 146. Mr. Singer sent money to Texas, and to correct the record, he received a draft of the investment agreement and was told in the email, yours will be the same. And it had the Texas jurisdiction venue provisions in it. He sent those agreements to his attorneys and to multiple different investment advisors, and only sent in his first wire of money to the state of Texas after he already knew that that was in the agreement. And then later it was, again, never taken out. He sent money to Texas, he consented to venue in that agreement, and he directed his company's actions on a Texas project. To clarify briefly the Kelly case, and I thought I had a copy of it with me. I do not. I'll be happy to submit a letter brief to the court on the clarification if the court so chooses. But my understanding of the Arizona contractor was that the Arizona contractor had never signed up to be part of the project in question in Texas. And so the fact that the project was in Texas didn't really matter to this particular defendant. In this case, separating those two, project was in Texas. These defendants were part of the project, and there's no question about that. And their actions in furtherance of the project took place in Texas, directed by these defendants, including Mr. Singer. So I have very little time left if you have any questions, Your Honors.
No questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Oh, you get rebuttal again. I'm sorry.
I have the screen.
We were kind of out of order, yes. I apologize.
2 minutes, and I'll be very brief. With respect to the analysis of the Carlisle Bank Shares case, you're all very familiar with it. I don't need to explain it to you. But especially appearing defendants object to the notion that the standard of review is ever dicta in a case. It was the standard applied. It was stated. We cited other authorities that were not responded to. Supermedia LLC, the law offices of Asherson, states the same thing. There had been a note that these were memorandum opinions rather than published decisions. If you want a published decision, CNOOC Southeast Asia Limited, V. Paladin Resources Limited, 222 Southwest 3rd, 889, at page 894 is a published decision that addresses the issue. Going back to the contractual issue, I will merely note that when Mr. Singer received an email stating that your contract will be the same, and then a contract was sent to him with his name on it, the parties then engaged in months of negotiation over the agreement. No element of the party's conduct here suggested that the parties believed a final agreement was transmitted to Mr. Singer when the first agreement was sent to him. To the contrary, lawyers began to immediately negotiate the terms of those agreements. Those negotiations never concluded, and no signature was ever obtained. Thank you.
All right, now, thank you, gentlemen, very much for your arguments before us here today. Your case is submitted, and you are free to go about your business. The court will be in a brief recess before hearing our 11 o'clock case.
Thank you. All right.